Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for joining us today on the Imitating Jesus podcast hosted by Icon Ministries. Hey, the vision of Icon Ministries in this podcast is to see disciples everywhere loving like Jesus. We, by God's grace, seek to accomplish this by initiating love, self-sacrifice, friendship, belonging, hospitality, and empowerment that leads to the multiplication of disciples of Jesus throughout the world. Tonight, the topic on the Imitating Jesus podcast is going to be the role of pursuit in the disciple-making process. How does pursuing the ones in whom we are investing play into making disciples? Louis, I want to start with a story. There is a guy in our crew. His name is Tim. Tim is also one of the associate producers of this podcast because he's sitting in the room right now. So we were at a barbecue recently with Tim, and he introduced us to one of the guys that he has started to disciple. And so we were just asking this young man, he was a college student, you know, hey, how'd you meet Tim? How'd you get involved in this community? And he said, well, I met Tim, and then we were talking, and, you know, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do this summer during college, and Tim said, well, why don't you come live with me and my roommate and roll with us this summer, and let's walk together towards the Lord. And it sounded pretty cool, but, you know, he didn't have a job or and didn't have any money, and Tim just said, that's no problem. We'll cover you till you get going, all your meals, your housing, don't worry about it. Just come be with us, be a part of us. Let's walk through life towards Jesus together. And so, you know, we were talking to this young man, and so he did. Yeah, he moved in with Tim and his roommate, Justin. And as he was describing, he said, I've never been a part of something like this before, where someone just came to me, reached out to me and said, hey, we want you to be with us. And not only do we want you to be with us, we're gonna cover you. We're gonna pay your way until you can contribute. And, you know, in his words, like, that was just a life-changing thing, like to be invited into a relationship, to be invited in a community like that. And to me, that simple story well illustrates the power of pursuing the people that God places around us and doing it in an intentional way. So, Louis, you were there. Do you have anything to add to that story? Am I recollecting that correctly?
Yes, and the pursuit comes from the very essence and nature of God. The nature of God pursues because God is love, and love seeks what's best for the beloved, but then also to be in union with the beloved. And so the very nature of love in the Godhead is to pursue. And so when Jesus comes to earth once again, the opportunity for us to see what does God look like in the world in which we live, and what does he do? He pursues these 12 men. He says, hey, you're coming with me, Andrew, you know, and be a Matthew or a Peter, and he brings them together into a community, and it all began with the pursuit. And here's the thing that's interesting, is the other 11 men, what did they know? Is not only were they pursued, but that Jesus had pursued them. And therefore, I had better treat them with the respect and value that Jesus had for them, because in the same way he pursued me, he pursued them, and therefore I need to treat them accordingly in love.
Yeah. I think that it's very interesting to note that Jesus went after his guys, because that was not the norm in that culture for a rabbi. Usually the pupils chose the rabbi. They went to the rabbi and said, can I study under you? Can I be a part of your school? But Jesus, as usual, wasn't concerned with convention, because Jesus wasn't starting a school or an organization or an institution. He was starting a movement about the glory of God. And who is God? Like you said, God is love. The essence of God is love. And so I think it's perfect that Jesus' invitation to his followers wasn't an invitation to an organization or an institution, but to a loving relationship with him. And and through him, a relationship with God the Father and with other men and women on that journey with him. And as we are discipling people, that's exactly the kind of relationship that we are inviting people into. And that's why pursuing our disciples in love and friendship is such a key part of making disciples and creating that sense of belonging.
Well, and let me contrast. This summer, I've come across two sharp young men and a sharp young woman who I would say are the, you know, the cream of the crop of our churches. And for all three of them, no one has ever pursued them within the church. They have a heart for God. They have a heart for the kingdom. But no one has ever sought them out and singled them out to pursue them. And I'm not quite sure why we do that, why we don't pursue, but we don't. And that to me is just the almost the square one, the first phase of disciple making, making disciples is to pursue.
Louis, I feel like that is something, as I've observed your ministry for over 20 years, that you do exceptionally well, like the intentional way in which you pursue people. So if that's not the common expression of our faith is to pursue people, what about your experience or what about your mindset creates this habit of yours to pursue people intentionally?
Because I was pursued by Taylor Gardner 40 years ago. You know, he pursued me. Not only did he pursue me and develop a friendship with me, he also gave me a platform for ministry that I'm still standing on 40 years later. And I look and I go, what if Taylor had never done that for me? And a biblical illustration of this is Barnabas. You know, when Saul first came to faith, he comes to Jerusalem, and the apostles didn't believe he was truly a disciple, is what it says. And Barnabas got to know him and was convinced and fought for Saul. And so, no, he truly is a disciple of Yeshua. And so then persecution came, and Saul fled to his hometown of Tarsus. And years later, we're talking probably 5 years later, at this point, Barnabas is Antioch, and God's moving there, and it comes to his mind, I need Saul to make hundreds of miles, I forget what it is, it's between 300 and 500 mile trip, to Tarsus to look for him, it says. You know, I've got it opened in front of me here, where, you know, Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. Well, he wasn't even guaranteed he was going to find him. He found him and brought him to Antioch and gave him that foundation for ministry.
Yeah. So why, I'm going to ask a question, then I'm going to answer it, then I'm going to ask you to answer it better. So why is this so important in our world and in our relationships? And I'd say for one reason, it's because people are scared. People have been hurt. People build high walls to safeguard against those deep insecurities and the pain. And I feel like what pursuit does, when I pursue someone, it is removing the brick of insecurity, and it replaces it with a sense of belonging. So to you then, Louis, you know, why is this so important? You've said it's the essence of God. It's the pattern of Paul and Barnabas and others.
Well, it's the process of re-identification, you know, and it's part of the, maybe the introduction or the jolt to that is to be pursued. And it's so foreign to us to have that. And what you're doing, you're introducing your disciple to a process of belonging that takes years. Okay. Jesus took 3 years. I'm discipling a guy right now, and I told him this weekend, I said, okay, you need to understand that this is going to take years for you to sense this belonging. It's not like, oh, I belong. You know, it's not instantaneous. And how identity is formed is by belonging. And so you are cultivating into this them into this community with others, again, by pursuit. And our model is Jesus. That's what he did. And I would also argue, I think that's what Paul did. You know, he comes across to Timothy and says, boy, I want you on my team. And then he put them on the team. Paul always ministered out a team and engrafted Tim and Timothy into that team.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that I think is so important about pursuing people. Well, okay. Have you watched The Chosen, Louis? Have you been watching that?
Yes. Yes.
So I think it was in season two. There was an episode where they just spent a whole lot of time just with the disciples sitting around a fire and kind of digging into everybody's backstory and like to how they got chosen and wondering why did Jesus choose me? And so I think about the disciples going through their ministry with Jesus, like messing up, not getting it, like, and just, but asking that question, why did Jesus choose me? And then Jesus is gone and everything's really scary. And thinking again, why did Jesus choose me? And maybe not fully understanding that, but knowing he had a reason. And I think in the same way, this comes into play when my disciples, the people that I'm investing in, when they fail, when they have a setback, when they deviate from the path of faithfulness to the Lord, like, you know, I'm thinking through some times in the past when guys have fallen into sexual sin, few guys who have relapsed into drugs and alcohol, some guys just really getting stuck in the same mental loops and can't get beyond that. Guys being just crippled by fear when they're asking to share their faith. And in those moments of failure, when we continue to pursue, when we continue to walk alongside, we continue to stay with them. And in their dark moments when they're wondering, why did Jesus choose me? And why is Ryan choosing to stay with me, sitting with me in my junk and still here in spite of my junk? Why are they choosing me? Just how powerful that empowerment of knowing
right.
Chosen is, because failure becomes an opportunity, right? A disciple's failure is not a disruption to the disciple making process. It's a crucial part of it. And when the person knows that they're chosen, it means they know they're not disqualified or ejected from the relationship because they mess up.
Right. And a great example of that, you could say all of the 12 disciples, but Peter specifically, and Peter was even warned ahead of time that it's going to fail.
Yeah.
And you know, and that you're exactly right. You cannot separate failure of your disciple from the disciple making process. It is part of the process. Yeah. And so how do you as a discipler handle and deal with that failure? You know, one thing I want to kind of like a real practical point on this that I tell people who may not even be that familiar with disciple making or don't know how to do it on this topic of pursuit. I said, okay, in your world, in your church, in, you know, the spiritual circles in which you run, who is the sharpest young woman that you know? Who is the sharpest young man that you know? And what I want you to do is go pursue them, whatever that means. Take them Dairy Queen, take them to lunch, take them to coffee, have them over for dinner. and just begin with that one. I'm not asking you to pursue everybody in the world, but if you don't pursue that one man or that young woman, I doubt seriously anyone ever will. And my dad's birthday was yesterday. He was going to be 92. He passed away 2 years ago. And we had his funeral. And here he was 2 weeks of being 90, shy of being 90 years old. And close to 300 people at his funeral. I was just at another old person's funeral, and there was a handful of people there because they all died. But for Dad, there was 300 people there. And one of the reasons, I believe with all my heart, was there was a young man, a seminary student, who spoke at my dad's funeral, who talked about how when he was 13 years old, my dad began pursuing him. My dad was in his 70s at that point. maybe close to 80, you know, 70s. And then for the rest of his junior high and high school and college years, my dad pursued him. And, you know, and there's no age limit on this thing. Okay. My dad was not cool. My dad did not know anything about, you know, gaming, and just like, I don't know anything about gaming, you know, but that didn't matter for this young man named Brandon to have my dad take an interest in his life, change the directory of this kid's life, you know? So, hey, if my 80 something year old dad can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think about it this way. I teach a class at a local Bible college on making disciples, and I'll call on somebody in the class and say, okay, what would you think? Like, tell me who's your Christian hero? Who's the author, pastor, speaker, artist? Who's your Christian crush? And, you know, they'll say Francis Chan or whoever. And then I would say, imagine if Francis Chan came to you, or rather, imagine if you went to Francis Chan and said, hey, Mr. Chan, I respect you a lot. Would you be willing to disciple me? Walk alongside of me, show me your faith. And if he said yes, you know, how would that make you feel? Well, you know, the one guy said, that would be incredible. So I said, well, now imagine this. Now imagine Francis Chan comes to you and says, hey, I've seen the way you live your life. I've heard of your reputation, and I would love to invite you to walk with me as I walk towards the Lord and disciple you. How would that make you feel? And his direct quote was, I would pee my pants. and why is that? Because the empowerment, because of the worth and dignity, because of the power of being chosen is transformational. Just like your dad and that 13-year-old boy. Like, the fact that your dad went to him and said, I see something in you. And Louis, I remember after, you know, you'd been discipling me for like a year, and we sat around that dinner table, Izzy's restaurant in Little Rock, Arkansas, and I remember you looking me in the eye and pointing your finger at me and saying, Ryan, I want you to know that I love you, I believe in you, and I believe God has great purpose for your life. And then you not just said those things, which I remember to this day, like, you have spent 20 years validating your belief in those things.
20 years of trying to get rid of you, and I can't. You know?
Yeah, I know. Real sticky.
But, you know, that brings up a point, too, on pursuit and all that. I was never taught to pursue a team member for life.
Yeah.
You know, to have a Timothy with me. We know that Titus was with Paul for 20 years, that Timothy and Luke were with him for 18 years. No one ever told me to do that. And even there, I think there's that power of the pursuit and saying, this, be with me for life, you know, be on my team for life.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sorry, I got a sidetracked.
I'm used to your sidetracks.
Yeah, thanks.
That's wonderful. I want to continue to try to put some flesh on this and get real practical. So how would you encourage people to begin pursuing people? Things that you've done or that you do, or, yeah, how can we start putting this into motion? You mentioned Dairy Queen. Is Dairy Queen the key here?
That was my dad's. That's what he. I'm not a Dairy Queen person, but Dad found success with Dairy Queen, so why not? I think, you know, being aware and, you know, looking and keeping my eyes and ears open for these young men and women who seem to have a kingdom bent. Now, it's hard to know sometimes. But the realization that don't assume someone else will pursue them. Don't pursue someone else will have a spiritual conversation with them. In all likelihood, it will never happen. And so I just tuning your eyes and ears to that. And, you know, how do you know that Timothy isn't sitting, the next Timothy, the next Titus, is not sitting right there in the same church as you, the same you know, small group with you, whatever. And then when I'm using Titus and Timothy, both men and women who are kingdom leaders, and just being aware and then acting on it.
Yeah, yeah. I think something that you do particularly well, Louis, is in the process of pursuing people is just becoming an advocate for people, advocating for people. And what I mean by advocacy is just kind of thinking about like what is the most significant thing going on in a person's world right now? What transition, what emotional thing are they going through? What challenge are they facing right now? And then how, or what dream or ambition do they have? And then how, I just think you're so good, Louis, at inserting yourself into those things and fighting with people and for people, even without asking. I mean, because most Christians are nice enough, if you ask them to do something, they'll do it. But I think, you know, you are so proactive and preemptive in your love. Why are you that way? How did you develop that strategy?
Well, once again, Taylor Gardner and doing it for me, I think that's one thing. But then also the biblical prerequisites when we see what Jonathan did for David, you know, when we see what Jesus did for his men, what Barnabas did for Saul, what Paul did for his guys. I think it's the, you know, just that's what disciple making is, and that's what changes lives. And I think a key component there is giving them, helping them establish a platform for ministry and how to do it, you know, because often they just don't know where to start or how, they do not have any foothold, toehold. And so providing them that toehold for them to be able to, you know, get into ministry. Yeah. And you don't have to be a pastor or a leader of a Christian organization to do that, you know. And so I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why it's biblically and it's changed my own life.
Yeah. But I think I've cracked your code a little bit too. One reason I think you're so good at pursuing and advocating for people is because you pray for people so faithfully. You've got your little pictures, your pin that prays your name. Because when you're praying for people, you're thinking about them. When you're thinking about them, you're thinking, well, how can I love? How can I serve this person? And so I think, you know, prayer does two things. Obviously, it opens the storehouses of heaven and unleashes the divine power. But it also makes you more mindful of how to be a friend to somebody. And as we've said time and again, making disciples is as simple as making friends, being a friend. Age before beauty.
Well, and I do think, you know, truly believing that the Spirit of God is at work, C.S. Lewis used to say that in his own autobiography, he says, I think a person's view of God, themselves, the world, is set by the time they're 14. And I probably wouldn't disagree with that. And so when I'm talking to a 13-year-old, I'm believing God has been talking to them, talking to her, and, you know, and forming within them, you know, like a view of God, a view of the kingdom, a purpose for their life. But no one has ever sat down with them to help navigate what that may be. And so it doesn't matter if they're 14 or 18 or 25 or 50. For many of them, where the voice of God began their life is way back there. And again, I had better get on God's agenda for this woman's life, for this guy's life, for this teenage girl's life, this teenage boy's life, because they're God's creation, God's child. And so I should be interested in diving in and listening to their story and hearing what God has said to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think another key thing to keep in mind is that when we choose to pursue people, that doesn't always just mean there's going to be an instant connection or best friends forever. Like, especially when a person has been hurt before relationally, often people tend to try to push you away. You know, they will drop a bomb on you. They will try to kind of self-sabotage the relationship just to see, are you going to run away? just like everyone else? Are you going to leave me just like everybody else has? So to be mindful that if there's resistance, it's not necessarily saying, well, this just isn't the right fit.
But resistance, or even almost like an apathy, or like they don't seem to care or notice that you even asked, or they seem hesitant and all that. Because first of all, they've never had that happen before.
Right.
That someone has pursued them. And then also it becomes a little threatening. You know, they don't know your motive.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you start asking questions about exploring their story and their inner man, I mean, they're not used to that.
Yeah.
You know, and as it goes along, they'll get more and more comfortable with it. And once again, it's a long disciple making is a long game.
Yeah. Yep.
It's months, years.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so that idea of persistence, like I remember years ago with our friend Jeremy, you know, as I got to know him at grad school, just felt like, man, this is a great guy. I think I really want him to be a part of us, part of our community. And so I was persistent in inviting him to be a part, and he was persistent in finding reasons not to. And largely it's because I was kind of a flaming extrovert engulfing this introvert. But eventually he decided to come over, mostly just to get me off his back. But when he came, he spent that first night, you know, around our dinner table, and after hours of being there, it was late, we had homework to do, it was time to go home. But he said, guys, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. And I'm afraid to leave, because if I leave, I don't know if I'll ever find this again. And we said, don't be stupid. Just come back tomorrow. We're here. Let's do it. And we've been walking with Jeremy for 15 years. And Jeremy is one of the best at pursuing people that I've ever seen. And he makes disciples nobody's business. I think part of that is because, you know, he knows that he was pursued and that he belonged to us. And so he created a sense of belonging for others. Louis, any other thoughts on pursuit practically?
Well, it's the pursuit is creating a God experience for a person, both for the nature and essence of God and what love is, but also the gospel. And the fact that the gospel is the pursuit of God for us.
Yeah.
And that, and it is what love is demonstrated, that God demonstrated his love for us. And while we're yet sinners, Christ died for us. And this is love, not that we love God, but he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sin. So it is it's an experience of God. It's an experience of the gospel when we, you know, pursue.
Yeah, absolutely. The medium is the message, right?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Is that your final defense?
It's my final. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening to today's podcast on Pursuing Your Disciple. You can head over to iconministries.org to connect with us or access our other articles and videos on making disciples. We at Icon Ministries are a faith-based ministry relying on the gifts of God's people. If you'd like to give support to support our ministry, you can find that on our website, iconministries.org. Thanks again, Louis. You're always insightful and encouraging. Love you much, brother.
And, love you too.
See you all soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.